Now let's talk about the final stage in the process of vocabulary building, putting your new words into action. What are you going to do with all these new words you are working so hard to learn? I mentioned earlier how words are the tools of thought. They are, in fact, like finely engineered pieces of machinery, in the sense that they are designed to perform a specific function with precision. If a carpenter drives a large nail into a slender piece of wood, the wood will split. So it is with sentences. If a word is too complicated or too simple, if it is forced or awkward, or if its meaning does not fit the context exactly, the sentence becomes faulty and useless, like that split piece of wood. There's an anecdote my family has passed down for generations that illustrates this point. My great-grandfather was a dyed-in-the-wool Yankee from Andover, New Hampshire. He divided his time between practicing law, dabbling in state politics, and running a small farm on which he employed from time to time a handyman named George. Well, one day George decided to build himself a new house. So that spring he went to work, sawing and hammering, and by harvest time the dwelling was finished. George invited my great-grandfather over to admire his handiwork. My great-grandfather walked slowly around the place, inspecting everything. Then he stepped back and examined the structure from a distance. "Well, what do you think?" George asked, worried by my great-grandfather's puzzled expression. "George," said my great-grandfather, "does that door frame look a bit crooked to you?" "By golly, it does, now that you mention it. And that window there, it seems to be lower than the one next to it." "You know, you're right," George replied. "I never noticed that before." "And George, look at the roof. Seems to be sagging some, wouldn't you say?" The poor handyman had to agree. "Well," said my great-grandfather. George was silent for a moment. "You know, I can't understand it," he said finally. "Them tools was all new." Words are like tools also in the sense that if you care about them, keep them in good working order, and use them conscientiously, they will perform beautifully and never wear out. But if, like George, your tools are all new but you don't know how to use them properly, you are setting yourself up for a few unpleasant surprises. That's the challenge of taking the step from acquiring a new word to using it in your writing and conversation. How and when you use the words you learn will, of course, be your decision and your responsibility. But I can offer you some guidelines that will help you put your new vocabulary into action right away, and help you enjoy doing it right and doing it well. The first thing you should do with every new word is try it out silently in your mind several times before using it in speech or writing. Say you're in the middle of a telephone conversation and you think of an adroit way to slip in one of the words you've just learned. Great! You're on your way to mastering the word. But wait, don't use it yet. Let it pass this time, and make a mental note to check verbal advantage and your dictionary to be sure that your usage and pronunciation were correct. If they were, then the next time you can use the word with assurance. If you didn't get it quite right, listen to the keyword discussion again. Then record the word and the definition on a flashcard and review it until you feel confident you can use it precisely. Sometimes the hardest part of learning new words is putting them in context. The problem with acquiring a miscellaneous assortment of words is that they tend to remain miscellaneous, floating in the gray matter of your passive vocabulary instead of being cataloged in the proper cubbyhole of your active memory. You need to create a vivid, personal context for each word you learn, and this is where the power of association can help you. Try making a list of a dozen or so new words, and next to each one, write something that particular word brings to mind. Examples might include people you know, places you've been, books you've read, experiences you've had, or some image the word evokes from you. One effective method I have employed in my own vocabulary building is associating a word with the circumstances in which I first encountered it. Where did I read it? Who said it? What was my reaction to the way it sounded or the way it was used? By using this method, I have found I can remember where and when I learned a certain word, even as far back as my childhood. Another helpful method is to keep a journal or personal notebook in which, as you record your thoughts and experiences, you occasionally test out some of your new words, and so gain practice with them before putting them to more public use. Here are a few other pragmatic suggestions to help you build confidence in your new vocabulary. Jot down 3 or 4 words you want to use on a given day, and on the way to work, imagine a conversation with a coworker in which you use them, or try to incorporate them into a letter or report you have to write. In your office, place your list of new words by the phone, the typewriter, or the computer, so you can refer to it as you conduct your business. Finally, if you encounter a new word in your reading and the passage in which you found it is especially interesting or meaningful to you, you might try memorizing it and quoting it in something you write or at an opportune moment in a meeting. One very important thing you must do with each word you learn is decide if it is better used in writing or in speech, or if you are comfortable using it either way. For example, a word like lachrymose, L-A-C-H-R-Y-M-O-S-E, doesn't occur often in speech and has a literary and somewhat old-fashioned flavor. Therefore, in conversation, tearful, mournful, or even lamentable would be more appropriate. On the other hand, the words lucid and perspicuous can be used either in writing or conversation, where the simpler word clear would not have the same power, precision, or style. In conclusion, let me offer you a few words of advice on what not to do when you put your vocabulary into action. Don't try to use a new word too soon, before you have studied it and tested it repeatedly in your mind. Wait until you feel entirely comfortable with a word. Otherwise, you run the risk of misusing it and embarrassing yourself. Don't use a new word just for the sake of using it. If you suspect that a familiar word may be more appropriate in a given situation, use the familiar word. Be patient, and the time for the new word will come. Also, use restraint. Don't lard your sentences with difficult words simply for the effect. I assure you that this sort of exercise is exciting only for you, never for your listener or reader. Remember that the goal of communication is to be lucid, not inscrutable. Like your wardrobe, your diction doesn't have to be ostentatious to look good. The final and very important don't is don't use your vocabulary to impress people. That's like flashing a wad of bills to show everyone how flush you are. The person who shows off with words only annoys or intimidates others. The big word is not always the better word. Certain words are more appropriate in a given situation than in others. When choosing your words, always consider the intelligence, education, interests, and concerns of the person you are speaking to or the people who will read what you write. That's not to say that you'll never be able to use many of the words you learn. On the contrary, a large vocabulary will make you a more capable and versatile user of the language because you will have a greater selection of words to choose from and a better understanding of how to use them precisely. A powerful vocabulary will help you communicate more effectively with people than ever before, provided you are sensitive to the subtleties of using the right word in the right place at the right time. I assure you that if you continue listening carefully to this program and make a conscious effort to read more and consult your dictionary, using your new vocabulary soon will become as natural as riding a bicycle or tying your shoes.